Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
It's Friday, Raider Nation. Welcome back to the Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio from Las Vegas, the capital of Raider Nation. As always, powered by our good friend Sam and Ash, injury attorneys. Call them anytime, 702-820-1234. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, relaxing Thanksgiving. It was a day off for me, so it all catches up to you on the day when you stop running, you know? But I had a good time. Hope you guys had a great time. We appreciate you being back here. I think we're the first live show of the day, so we want to get some Raider talk in here. And as always, I bring in my co-host, my good friend and partner, Mr. Q Myers. Q, how was your Thanksgiving, man?
Oh, it was great, man. Thanksgiving is always good. You get an opportunity to hang out with some family. Obviously, this year is a little bit different, but either way you look at it, get a little downtime, a little relaxation in, and be able to watch some football and hang out. So, yeah, man, glad to be back on the airwaves, and glad to know that we're the first show for the day live, man. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, let's get all those pent-up Raider discussions out in the open.
Oh, and there's a lot of them.
Oh, there is. by the way, our listener line, the Raider Nation hotline, 702-365-9200 is the number. Today's show, as always on Fridays, senior NFL columnist Mo Moten joins us. He'll be with us. He'll talk about the Raiders at 6-4 this year versus the Raiders at 6-4 last year, because there's a big difference. He has two reasons why there's a big difference, and he'll tell you about that coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Top of the next hour, Nick Cothrell from Silver and Black Today will be here. He's going to talk about the Falcons' offense. Very underachieving this year, but a tough road test coming from the Raiders, for the Raiders, I should say, as they head down to Atlanta this weekend. They just concluded the John Gruden press conference. We'll have some of that. We'll also have the Q-tip for this day after Thanksgiving, and we'll try to catch up with Vinny Bonsignore on the road somewhere in America on his way to Atlanta to get the latest news and inside information from him. But Q, so much going on. Of course, we heard from John Gruden just about an hour ago. Talk about one thing. And guess what? We actually got a full Trent Brown update. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right, here's John Gruden on the status of Trent Brown.
I think the first thing is his state of mind is excellent. He's passed all his tests. He's going to resume to practice on Wednesday, and hopefully we'll get him back in the lineup shortly after that. The number one thing right now is his health, and it was a serious matter. Obviously, we've done everything possible to make sure all systems are go, and we're anxious to get Trent back on the grass with us on Wednesday.
So there you go. The timeline so far, Trent Brown back at practice this next Wednesday before the Jets game, which make him eligible to play in New York when the Raiders go back to the East Coast after going there to play Atlanta. So some good news there, I think, Q, best I can tell.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whenever Trent Brown is 100% healthy and able to get out there, he's an asset to the Raiders. The problem is he hasn't been 100% healthy this whole season. So, yeah, if they can get him back for the stretch run, that would be great. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with his future after this season with the Raiders. I highly doubt that he's back in the silver and black, but that doesn't matter. What matters is if he can finish off the season and go into a playoff run, whatever the Raiders earn, if he can be out there for that, that would be great.
Yeah, it would be huge for them to get Trent Brown to be healthy the rest of the way as they make this late season playoff push, right? By the way, the injury report, Friday's injury report, Clee Farrell, a lot of people interested in that. He was limited in practice again, as listed as questionable, so we'll see whether or not he plays. It would be great for them. The Falcons on the other side of the ball, of course, Todd Gurley out with a knee from a running perspective, but good to hear that Clee Farrell's getting back to healthy. We don't know if he'll be there 100%. Also, Josh Jacobs, who's been limited in practice, they asked Coach about his hip. Nothing serious. They expect him to be good for game time. On the other side with the Falcons, Julio Jones, limited. He went from limited yesterday to did not practice today, listed as questionable. Dante Fowler, the defensive end, is also listed as questionable, as is tight end Hayden Hurts, who is limited and is questionable as well for the Falcons. So there you go. You got your injury report here. But Q, this game, and I know we're going to talk about it With Mo and with Nick later. But this game is so very important. I mean, all the games are important going down the stretch, of course. But I think these next two games for the Raiders are very, very, very dangerous for them. You look at the Falcons. We talked about it with John Kincaid on Wednesday from Atlanta. This team, if you let them hang around too long, that offense, it's been underachieving, but it has lots of talent.
No doubt. No doubt about it. These next two games for the Raiders should be W's, which doesn't mean they're going to be W's. They got to go out there and earn it. They got to go out there and put their best game out there on the field and go get those W's. But they should be W's, should be lining themselves up with a really good game 3 weeks from now against with the Colts. But still, either way you look at it, you got to take it 1 week at a time. And the Raiders cannot sleep on anyone. And again, if you allow Atlanta to hang around, especially with that offense, they could come up and bite you.
Yeah, especially with the Raiders defense, who at times plays well, but very quickly wears down. We saw that against Kansas City after that long drive in the third quarter. So they need to make sure they limit as much as possible that Atlanta Falcons offense from being on the field. Okay, we're going to go out on the Raider Nation hotline, and our good friend Matt in Hoboken joins us. Matt, you're with Silver and Black today here on the day after Thanksgiving. What's going on, man?
What's up, guys? Happy belated Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
I have a quick question. I mean, a quick comment about the Atlanta game, and then a quick question for you guys. The comment is that this game has, and you guys were just talking about it, this game has classic hangover feel to it. I just feel like it's one of those hangover type games. As even as recently as yesterday, our players are still answering questions about the Chiefs game in their press conference. So I just don't know if we've fully moved on from that game yet. I hope we have. It's the sign of a mature team if we have, and if we can come out and do what we're supposed to do this week and next week. But it does have that classic hangover, letdown kind of game feel to it. Now, as far as my question, I have a question about, can you guys clarify to me exactly what goes into the decision-making the NFL makes about when to push a game back with COVID and when not to? Because, you know, some teams it seems like get pushed back, some teams don't. I mean, we had to actually play earlier than our actual game time, and I think it was the Bucs week when we had some problems. So they didn't move us back. They actually moved us earlier. Now the Baltimore Ravens get pushed back 2 days. I remember the Titans got pushed back. So what goes into that decision?
First of all, Matt, yeah, no, thanks for the call, man, as always.
Good call.
I think two things with, and I want to say this too, because I've been very adamant about the Raiders and the differences between the games because of the numbers of players who tested positive versus when the Raiders had close contact situations. At the same time, while I still hold fast by that, I agree. I think some of the game movement was due to that. I think in this case with the Ravens, I'm suspect because the NFL is being very inconsistent with it. You're going to move two of their games actually.
Right.
Because they move from Thursday to Sunday, and they have a Thursday game next week now that has to be moved again.
So yep, exactly. That's going to be played on Monday now.
Yes. And so while I don't know that, again, I don't think the Raiders were necessarily singled out the way that their game went. I know it moved earlier in the day because it was the nighttime game. I understand that point of view, especially from Raider fans. What I don't understand is why the Ravens are getting two breaks on this situation. I understand moving the game from Thanksgiving to Sunday. I get it, okay, because of the number of infections. But then you're going to move the other game. I just don't know. And there's no answer to your question, Matt, and I think that's why you asked it, is because the NFL, and it's not just a Raiders thing. I think overall the NFL is inconsistent, and this one reeks of protecting their reigning MVP.
Yeah, I mean, it does. You know, he's not going to play this Tuesday.
Right.
But what they did by moving that second game against the Cowboys to that Monday night game, that allows him a chance to play on that Monday night primetime type game atmosphere. So, yeah, that has a lot to do with it. I think this whole year, these guys have kind of been flying by the seat of their pants and nothing has been consistent, you know. And so that's just unfortunately what it is.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I look, I do think I've always said in everything, and we talked about it, Q, with drug suspensions, going back to talking about certain players throughout the course of this football season, the NFL is always inconsistent. And yes, when it comes to certain situations with punishments and fines and all that stuff, I'm still waiting for the Ravens. And I said, at the time when the story came out, I said, look, unless you show that the Ravens violated protocol, then I don't know why you would punish them severely. But then we found out that a trainer was treating players without a mask. He was doing what the Raiders did. So,
yep, exactly.
So I am still waiting, and I agree with those fans out there who are saying, hey, you fined us, you took a draft pick from us. Okay, so what's going on with the Ravens?
Right. Exactly. It's mind-blowing, really. I mean, you just kind of look at it, and I don't even get mad anymore. I just kind of look at it and shake my head because it's like, of course they do.
Yeah, and here's the thing, though. If the Ravens, I can tell you, the good side is if they're inconsistent and they don't punish the Ravens like they did the Raiders or the Saints, then the Raiders, I think, have a much better chance. And I think I always believed, and Vinny told us weeks ago, that I believe the Raiders will not lose that draft pick. I think on review, appeal. On appeal, I think the Raiders will get their draft pick back. I really do. Especially now with all this evidence of teams not getting punished. So you mm-hmm. can't, you have to be consistent. You can't punish one team more than the other if they're violations of protocols. And with the Ravens, it now sounds like there were multiple violations. So then you get up into the same category as the Raiders.
Right, exactly. They got coaches and they got all kind of players out. I mean, it's just a big mess. And look, it's going to become a big mess all across the league. You just saw a couple more guys in Denver pop. I mean, this time of year, man, this is what it's going to be. You know, you're going to get a lot of guys come down with COVID-19 and end up positive, and they're going to have to make some moving and shaking. And they have that week 18, but the NFL is trying not to use it as of right now.
All right, well, we're back. We're going to go back out on the Raider Nation hotline. We're going all the way down under our good friend Rossi in Australia. You're on with Scott and Key. What's going on, Rossi?
Happy Thanksgiving, boys. I hope you had a good day yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
We celebrated here as well, but it was Friday. quick thing about the NFL. I know a lot of Steelers fans were really upset with the game being moved, but the Steelers have got to look at this long term. The sheer fact is they were running around on that pitch with X amount of Ravens that were infected. It would have affected them in the following week and the following week as well, because they would have had players pulled out. The NFL has to be consistent. I agree with that. And I think that to the caller's earlier point, we're the only game that's actually ever been brought forward because of COVID, not pushed back, which is always strange. But I'm not looking at it from a conspiracy theory point of view. In regard to the game this weekend, obviously no Gurley. Julio Jones is going to be tough to play as well. So the focus really just goes on Ridley and Matt Ryan. I think that given Matt Ryan's inability to move, I think we're going to see a really positive pass rush. I think we're going to see a really positive defensive play to try and make up for just that last drive against the Chiefs. But I think from a hangover point of view, even fans, we've still got a bit of taste in our mouth. But the best thing to do is then go and beat the next person that's on your schedule. And I fully expect us to put 40 on the board against a very porous Falcons defense and certainly keep them down to under 20. So big victory this weekend, and obviously great news about Trent Brown. If he's actually fit, that does make the offensive line a lot better.
Oh, it sure does. Yeah, absolutely. Rossi, thanks again, man, for the call. We appreciate you very much. And Q, you said this on your Q-tip on Wednesday. You know, we're going to find out a lot about this team and who they are, right? And I think that these types of road games, especially against the Falcons can put up points. We're going to talk about that all day today. But if you're a team that is now taken, which I think the Raiders are, and they'll either prove me right or wrong on Sunday, if you're the kind of team that you've taken that next step, look how you played Kansas City. Now it's time. You got to go beat two teams that you're supposed to beat.
Right. Exactly. And going back to, you know, a call that we had early, you got to move on, you know, and I talked about that early in this week. You know, I was like, hey, that was a tough loss. We were talking to Hunter Renfrow. Remember when I said, how quickly can you look at the film, see what you did wrong, flush it, and move on? Because if you let that thing linger around and hang in your mind, you will lose this game this Sunday.
Yeah, no question. And I think that's the importance of it, is to make sure that you have moved on. And that's what separates playoff teams, frankly, from those that aren't. You're able to move on because you know the task at hand is that next game. And the Raiders have to do this. Now, you got to forget all of the negativity around the last play, the last drive, all that stuff. They had Jonathan Abram, actually. Jonathan Abram talked about the Falcons, too, right? They brought Jonathan Abram from the media yesterday on Thanksgiving,
yeah.
And they asked him, you know, what are you going to do to contain this Atlanta offense?
Every game is kind of what we consider a big game because it's the next game, and that's the only thing that matters. You know, we've kind of went over these guys. You know, they got some of the premier guys, top guys across the league, like Julio, Calvin Ridley. They got a tight end that's playing really well this year, Hayden Hurst. But then, you know, they also got Matt Ryan, you know. So, you know, we prepared this week. You know, we're ready to go out there this week and just get the job done.
So there you go. That's what you want to hear, right?
I like what he said, and I like how he said it. You know what I mean? Yep, it sounded as a matter of fact. And so I hope that that is the mentality in the locker room right now.
Yeah, and I get the sense that it is. You know, Rossi brought up, or Matt and Hoboken brought up, the fact that if you listen to the press conferences, a lot of us asking questions about the Chiefs game still, right? It's Thursday. And, I mean, I know how we put the show together here. We kind of turn the page starting on Wednesday. Like we don't really go back much other than for reference and talk about the game that was. We talk about the game that's coming. I think the press too, it's a slow week. It's what it is, but they're just, I think it's that moment in time where even the media is looking at this team and saying, "Okay, are you guys past this now? Are you able to make the next step?"
Well, on top of that, Scott, that was such a premier game.
Yes.
And it really let everybody who, you know, some people watch the NFL, and then there's some people that live the NFL. So the people that just kind of watched the NFL and didn't really know what the Raiders were about learned real quickly what they were about Sunday night against the Chiefs, even in a loss. So, I mean, I've been going around covering games the last couple of days, you know, a couple of Lady Bear basketball games. And, I mean, everyone in the media is like, man, Q, your Raiders really showed out. You know what I mean? It's like it's the first thing on people's minds right now is what the Raiders are doing. And so that's another reason why that conversation is still being brought up about the Chiefs game, because it was such a big, almost like a, hey, by the way, we're here.
Yeah, it had all the makings of sort of like a playoff game, right? That's the kind of atmosphere you'd have around a playoff game, and you may. We'll see how the seedings wind up, but we'll see. And I think you're right about the way he said something, you know, the way he said it and his conviction. And I've heard that from other players and the coaches this week about moving on and moving forward and not getting caught up in that. And one of those things is really – on offense, too. You know, you talk about Greg Olsen, the offensive coordinator, and what the Raiders are going to do. Rossi said he thinks they're going to score 40. I'm almost there with him because I think they should. But they asked offensive coordinator Greg Olsen yesterday about the Falcons and making sure that they don't overlook them.
This isn't college football. You know, this is the National Football League, and if you don't prepare every week, you will be embarrassed. We try to obviously guard against that as coaches, and I think the more mature team you have, the more veteran-type players you have, the more you avoid those pitfalls of a trap game out there. But I think we have a mature team. They've prepared well this week with the shortened schedule, and we wouldn't expect anything less from them. But certainly, every team is in the National Football League can beat any other team on any given Sunday, and so we hopefully our players are mature enough to understand that.
There you go, Greg Olsen. And I agree with him, Q, on the offensive side of the ball. They're much more a mature team, even though they got some young players over there. The defense is what worries me more for the quote-unquote trap game. Even though, again, we love what we heard from Jonathan Abram there, that's where my concern is on the defense, especially on that young back end.
Well, you know, what makes me feel better is that's why the Raiders go out and get guys from Clemson, from Alabama, from big time programs that know how to win and expect to win. So when they have adversity and they have challenges like they do coming off a big loss like that, they know how to put that behind them and rebound. That's what happens when you go to a big time program. So you got Damon Arnett, Ohio State. You got Trayvon Mullen, Clemson. You know what I mean? You got dudes like that that can get after it. Cleve Ferrell, if he's out there, Clemson. I mean, that's just what it is. So I feel better because they're coming from a program like that.
Yeah, there's no question that helps those guys. And we've seen it, right? Even when they, I've noticed it too, even when players like these make mistakes, like they're used to being in under the microscope of the media and so on because they played at those big programs. So even like Jonathan Abram, when he got in front of the media yesterday, somebody asked him about the last play. He drove through. He said, yeah, you know, miscommunication. I blew the last play and we learned from that. Now we step forward and we don't do it again. I do my job. I got to do my job on every play, right? Bingo. He moves on. You can see mentally and in his body language that he's there already, that he's ready to make that next step and say, okay, I learned from it. Now it's time for me to worry about Calvin Ridley. It's time for me to worry about Julio Jones if he plays. So that's a big deal. So we appreciate that. But anyway, we're coming up here on the first break. We have Joe on the line from Houston. Joe, hang on. We'll get to you right after the break.
H-Town, baby.
H-Town. And Joe's got passion. I love when Joe calls in. Also, coming up, bottom of the hour, Mo Moten, our senior NFL columnist at silverandblacktoday.com, as well as being a contributor at Bleacher Report. He'll be with us. He'll talk about how this year, because a lot of people, they're like, hey, Raiders were 6-4 last year this time too. And it went downhill, right? Mo's going to tell us why it won't this year. And there's two specific reasons why. We'll talk to him about that. And then Nick Cothrell will be with us top of the next hour to talk about the Falcons offense. So we have a lot to get to on this holiday Friday. You're with Q Meyer, Scott Gilbranson, Silver and Black Today, Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black Today. Here are your hosts, Scott Gilbranson and Q Myers.
Welcome back. Silver and Black Today, powered by Salmon Ash Injury Attorneys. Visit them at salmonash.com because you deserve what's right. Q Myers, Scott Gilbranson back here again. As we are almost every day. Yes, we took yesterday off for Thanksgiving. And, man, I got into it with some guy, although he never answered me because I just shut him down.
Were you on Twitter?
I was on Twitter, yeah, of course.
Shocking.
And you know me, I try to always resist.
Cesspool.
I always resist, except every once in a while. But they were talking about Wednesday, because Wednesday, Clay took off and Pritch took off because they were spending Thanksgiving. They did early Thanksgiving with their kids because of family stuff, so they had to do their Thanksgiving on Wednesday. And there's some guy just ripping the station. Oh, we need new content. What kind of crap is this? Taking this day of recorded stuff. I'm like, hey, dude. Guy's got a family, you know?
You know what's funny is for most of my radio career, which has been very long, I would think the exact same thing. Like, oh my gosh, you can't take a day off. And I promise you, Scott, I think until 2020, I was like, you know what? The hell with it. You could take a day off. You could take 2 days. I mean, seriously, I have missed out on so much throughout the course of my time in radio because everything's always, oh, I got to be on the air. Oh, I got to do this. And at some point, you just got to say, you know what, damn it, the radio will be there tomorrow. It's all good.
Yes, and that's why we felt it important for us to make sure we did a show on Friday because it's game week. This is the last day before we were in before Sunday's game. So we wanted to make sure we were live. But, you know, I mean, I think – and I appreciate listeners because they love the channel. They love the station.
Right, exactly.
Right? So I appreciate – that's why I didn't actually – you know, I wasn't a jerk to them. But it's just like, hey, you know, remember, just like when you go to the store on a holiday and there's somebody working there, they're not with their family. They're not with their friends or their loved one. So just chill out. We'll enjoy it. We'll give you great content as we move forward. So, anyway, we're going to go out on the phone line to one of our favorite guys who calls in and always brings it with lots of fire. That is our good buddy Joe in Houston. Joe, you're on with Q and Scott. What's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing? How was your Thanksgiving? I hope everything's safe and everybody was good.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, chilling.
Hey, I don't know if y'all remember. It was some weeks ago when we rounds. I said week 4 or 5 when I called in and I said that we should take a look at you guys, take a look at a certain player. You guys just killed me on this. Now I know we got to get past last week's loss, which is fine. I expect to see the same team again in the playoffs. I do. And I'm not just talking about we finishing at 7th and playing them in the 2 seed. No, I expect us honestly to win a couple of games, and then we're going to eventually see that squad again. But I know this move that I've been saying to do would help, along with the things that's been going on with Tack McKinley and Vic Beasley, you know, trying to do the reclamation project, Al Davis thing. We should kick the tires again on Earl Thomas. Now, hear me out. I think that slap on the wrist or more or less the being fact that he's been cut has humbled him. And the fact that nobody's came knocking on his door has humbled him. One thing I do know is our secondary lacks leadership. The key mistake that Abram made on Sunday night was something that Earl Thomas honestly could teach him personally. I personally believe that because you learn by playing with great players or guys that's been great. And then you look at the defensive alignment that Gunther can employ or deploy against a team like Kansas City when they can go to a 3-2-6. What I mean by 3-2-6, we will all agree that Jeff Heath is a lot better than Abram in pass coverage.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to leave his zone. He's going to take care of his business. Earl Thomas could play the other deep zone safety. Instead of spying Pat Mahomes with a defensive lineman or, say, the linebacker we got on Littleton, we can put Abrams at that linebacker position and spy him with Abrams. Now, if you imagine that he's playing a 3-2-6 zone, where Abrams is basically playing right next to Kukowski, and he drops back into that deep. Because you remember on the play, Kukowski more or less touched or bumped Kelsey and then passed him off to the safety that was supposed to be behind him. So Kukowski can play the same position he's been playing. But as I say again, you move Abrams down into the box, a lot like Jamal Adams, where you can spy Mahomes with that kind of speed and that kind of ferocity and hitting ability. And, you know, he's going to bring it if he's close to him. He's not going to outrun Abrams. And you can have Earl Thomas in the deep zone with Heath, and you have your cornerbacks being able to take up a play. What I didn't like what Gunther did was, and we all talked about this, was you still rushed four or five guys, and you wasn't touching them all night. So once you got to past the 40-yard line, you should have already went in your head and said, hey, I got to go to something that I know for a fact I'm going to make him have to hold his ball a little longer. That means I'm going to have more guys in coverage. And so all I'm saying is, I know y'all talked about how bad Earl Thomas acted the Baltimore thing and got cut and this, that, and the third. I think he's been humbled, the fact that he ain't been signed. And if we were to go sign him now and get prepared to play that team again in the playoffs, it'll put us a notch ahead. The last thing I'm going to say, and I know I'm quiet today because I'm about to eat my turkey leftovers. I'm happy about that. Anyway, the fact is this. Gruden, this goes out to John Gruden. If you don't know by now that you can trust number four to run your quote-unquote offense and give him the ball and let him go win games for you, I don't know when you're going to know it. Because on third and one, there's no reason in the world we should be throwing a fade route to number 89.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And kicking the field goal.
We talked about that.
Yeah. You have 28 in there, you should automatically say you're going against the champs. We have to play balls to the wall. We have to score touchdowns. And if we don't.
Uh-oh, we lost you.
Score.
Oh, there you are.
Nah, we're going to score the ball. We're going to score the ball from the one and get a touchdown. Or we just going to play defense for 99 yards and just play it that way. And after that, I'll take the call off there and listen to what you guys have to say.
Bro. Yeah, Joe, good way to say that. And actually, at the game when Q and I were sitting next together in the press box, the first thing he said with that pass, right, Q? You said,
"Yep, first thing.
I hate that pass to Edwards, a fade pass to a rookie." Yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense.
I don't like that play call. Like Joe said, when you have 28 and you have Ingold as well, I line up and I let everybody in the stadium, no pun intended, but I let everyone in the stadium know we're running the rock right up the gut and it's up to you to stop us and we're going to do it the next two plays. Yeah. That's what I would have done, the third down and fourth down, but we all see it didn't shake out like
that. Yeah, with your big offensive weapon, Josh Jacobs, and I agree with Joe on that one. On the Earl Thomas thing, I will reverse course and say that I agree with him. At this point,
I was about to say the same thing, brother. I'm okay with it, actually.
Because, look, you brought in Beasley, you brought in McKinnon, so you keep bringing in retreads and guys for the defensive line and for the linebacker spot, and I get that. But Joe hit on something you and I have talked a lot about in the last couple weeks, and that is Jonathan Abrams is going to be a good player. He's young. He's basically in his second rookie year, okay?
Right.
It's his rookie year. So you need somebody on the back end. Earl Thomas has all the talent. He had chemistry problems in Baltimore. It did not end well, so you understand why people stayed away from him. But right now, Joe is also right. I do think, as Patrick Mahomes and the coach Andy Reid said, the championship has to go through Kansas City. Whether Pittsburgh does it or whoever, it doesn't matter. You're still going to have to play Kansas City. If you're going to play Kansas City, you're going to have to guard Travis Kelce, which the Raiders couldn't do the other night, okay?
Right.
Go get Earl Thomas. I think, why not?
You know, and the reason why I say that I'm okay with that decision is the way that Joe planned out using him. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It wasn't like just go get Earl Thomas and everything's going to be saved, but he had a well thought out idea and a plan on how to execute that and how to put Jonathan Abram into position to be a better player. And ultimately, I think, and I'm a big Jamal Adams fan, I think you're going to have to use Abram similar to Jamal Adams moving forward. I think that's how you get the most bang for your buck when it comes to Jonathan Abram, because back there in the back end in coverage like he was on Sunday night, He's gonna upset you more than he's gonna make you happy. So I think you've got to realize and look at Jamal Adams and say, hey, this is the type of player that he could be. You've got to use him in this similar style.
Agreed. Well said. Okay.
Good call, Joe.
It was a great call by Joe. Always. He always has great calls, man. I love it. Okay, so we are now going to bring in our first guest of the day. That is our good friend, Mo Moten. Of course, our senior NFL columnist at silverandblacktoday.com. Also a big-time contributor up on Bleacher Report. I know he's got a fantasy column out today, too. So if you set your fantasy lineup.
Does that have to do with avocados?
Avocados. There he goes. It is who we call the Baron of Brooklyn. It is Mo Moten, and he joins us now on the Newsmaker line. Mo, how you doing, man? How was your Thanksgiving?
Doing pretty good. Really quick, I just want to say I'm glad you guys are coming around on the Earl Thomas situation. I don't think it can hurt at this point in the season. I mean, can he really wreck your locker room in a month? The second thing is I don't like the whole trap game thing. People are talking about trap game this, trap game that. The Raiders were the trap game a couple of seasons ago. There's no way the Raiders could look at any team as a trap game when they haven't done much in recent history. It just blows my mind that people use this term trap game for the Raiders. It just doesn't fit for me.
I hear you, Mo.
But I understand, Mo, where they're coming from, because they're coming off such a high, which was that Chiefs game, and then all of a sudden, you know, and especially losing it at the end like they did, and now all of a sudden having to travel and go to Atlanta. I can understand, maybe it's not not worded correctly in saying trap game, but I could see where they could come off and maybe get off to a slow start.
Right, and like an emotional letdown, in essence.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if you worry about coming out flat off an emotional game, I get that.
Yes.
But trap game is not the word. To me, a trap game is a good, perpetually good playoff team that overlooks a lesser opponent.
Right,
and I don't think the Raiders are there yet.
Okay, yeah, I gotcha. Dang, the grammar guy.
No, I know, man. Kidding. Mo coming kidding. In all proper today. Gotta call him Maurice, not Mo.
I know, exactly. Mr. Moten.
Exactly.
Mo, let's move on to the piece you wrote today up on silverandblacktoday.com about the Raiders and why you believe that they can avoid last year. This time last year, remember, this team was 6-4. You had the big win against Chicago in London, and then it all went downhill. You had the Jets loss. You had all sorts of just ugliness happen on the back end of 2019. But as you say, there's really two big reasons here why the Raiders at 6-4 this year are different than last year, starting with the elite play of Derek Carr. And you, like me, think that Carr is playing better this year than even he did in 2016, correct?
Yeah, that's how I feel about Derek Carr's play this year. I know a lot of people would say, well, he had a bunch of, I believe, 7 fourth quarter comebacks and game-winning drives. But if you look at the way Carr plays the position right now, he's way more comfortable using his legs. You saw that in Brown's game, rushing for 41 yards. He threw a touchdown, but in that game, they needed him to make winning plays with his feet, and he did that. As we can see, almost every week, when Carr extends plays, you see his hand signals, he's pointing, he's directing his receivers to go where he wants them to go so he can launch that pass. We didn't see a lot of that in his previous years. We're seeing that now, and I think that has to do with his 3-year command of the offense, him feeling comfortable in the offense. The other thing that I want to note that I didn't go into heavily in the piece was his growth as a leader. I know I mentioned Mayock talked about his workouts in the offseason, but Carr actually, if you remember before that Chiefs win, he called the meeting and got to call each other out, and I think that resonated with his team. A lot of people say, well, he's not a rah-rah guy, so how can guys rally around him? And I think he reached his team before that game, and the results showed in that Chiefs game. So the last thing I want to say is he's playing with fearlessness. I know a lot of fans criticized him about being a little too skittish in the pocket. He played scared after his leg injury, after he broke his ankle. And I don't think you're seeing that this year. He had that leaping first down against the Chargers. And again, he's extending play. So he feels comfortable with his body. He feels comfortable within the offense. And I think that's the big difference between 2020 Carr and 2019 Carr and even 2016 Carr.
Mo, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment and try to get too far ahead of myself, but if you start looking up and down the roster and you start looking at contracts, you start to see Derek Carr is going to be up pretty soon. Do the Raiders start to kind of have those conversations about extending him anytime soon?
I would wait until the season is over. How far do the Raiders go? Does Derek Carr crumble down the stretch? We're going to talk about today. They were 6-4. They were in the spot last year. So, as I said, people were saying, well, Derek Carr's got to get an extension. I say, let's just wait. Let's just wait a minute. Let's let the season play out. If he can lead the Raiders back to the playoffs, then I think those conversations would intensify and you have to keep him around. The way he's playing now, if he holds up the way he's playing now, then of course you have to talk about an extension. But again, let it play out because this season is not over yet. There's still 6 weeks left, and you still have to play well to get this team back to the playoffs.
Yeah, and you talk in your piece, Mo. Again, Mo Moton is our guest. You can follow him at Mo, M-O-E-M-O-T-O-N on Twitter. You talk in the piece, too, about the differences where Derek Carr's at and the fact that, hey, look, this guy, the confidence level is so high, and you want to do that. At the same time, though, he's checked the boxes. He's won at Arrowhead. He's won in cold weather. The boxes yet to check, and to your point about the season not being over yet, is they got to get in the playoffs. That's another box, and then win a playoff game. That's the second box. And so to me, yeah, the idea of an extension, if I'm the Raiders, I would be open to it, but you got to wait and see how things play out and where things might go and where you might draft and what opportunities are out there for players, because you don't know who's going to be on the trading block. You don't know what can happen. So that'll be interesting. Now, Mo, the second thing you talk about in your piece is the reason the Raiders at 6-4 this year different than last year is that depth at different positions. Talk about why this team is better built by Mike Mayock and John Gruden to handle injuries down the stretch.
Yeah, last year the Raiders had a lot of travel, I believe, between September 15th and November 30. Didn't have a home game. They had a trip to London smashed in between there. I know they had a bye week, but they went 4 weeks without a home game. So I think this team was gassed and undermanned. And I listened to injuries in the article. I mean, you can go up and down a line on both sides of the ball. Josh Jacobs had a fractured shoulder after week 7. Terrell Williams bladder battled plantar fasciitis in both feet after week 4. Hunter Renfrow with a punctured lung late in the season. Lost Foster Moreau. Trent Brown was injured at the end of the season. Vontaze Burfict suspended. Lost both their safeties by week 10. John Abram played one game. Carl Joseph had a game-winning interception on Philip Rivers and hurt his foot. Didn't play after week 10. So all those losses, and you look at what the team has done and what they built this year, you got Devontae Booker who could spell Josh Jacobs. Nelson Aguilar has stepped up, so the loss of Terrell Williams didn't hurt as much. Moreau is healthy. We saw Jason Witten have a big touchdown last week. We have Nick Kwiatkowski and Nick Morrow playing well at linebacker despite the uninspiring play of Corey Littleton. Brendan Parker has become a pretty good swing tackle, so you're not missing Trent Brown. You love to have him back, but you're not missing him as much because you have Brendan Parker playing well. Isaiah Johnson filling that game for the Raiders against the Chargers. So they have some depth at cornerback. And, of course, Jeff Heath, we talked about earlier in the show, he leads the team with 3 interceptions. So there's depth. There's players healthier now. So I think they can withstand some of those injuries if they have them. If COVID pops up, they have some players who can step up and play in the pinch.
Mo, how important can it be, sticking with that depth theme, that some of the Raiders, like a Trent Brown, obviously Damon Arnett has already returned to the lineup, but some of these guys are getting healthy for the stretch run instead of getting banged up right now for the stretch run like they did last season?
Yeah, definitely. It's the reverse of what we saw last year. As I mentioned, I just believe the Raiders were gassed. And I know people don't want to hear excuses about travel and injuries because every team has injuries, but when it hit the Raiders, it hit them where they just couldn't recover from it. And I remember Gruden being upset at the end of last year with their defensive performance against the Titans. And he said, we're going to shake things up. And I'm scratching my head thinking, well, what are you going to do? You don't have much to work with. So
right.
I believe this year, if he wanted to shake things up, and I think the defense will show some incremental improvements down the stretch. But this season, if the Raiders want to shake things up, they want to change things around, they can. Gruden asked about what is he going to do with the linebacker position. Last year, they had no choice but to play Tahir Whitehead for about 100% of the snaps. This year, they have a situation where Corey Littleton coming back, one of their prized free agent pickups, and he may not play a full workload because Nick Morrow is playing well. So, again, Vontaze Burfict was out last year after an indefinite suspension. It really dealt a hit to the linebacking core. That unit in the middle with Kwiatkowski and now Nick Morrow playing well, I think the defense, again, will pick up down the stretch. So, again, there's depth in different areas that you can rely on just in case those injuries pop up down the line.
Yeah, and Mo, we've talked the last few weeks, too, I know, as the entire Raider Nation has, just how Devontae Booker makes a big difference, because you talked about the loss of Josh Jacobs on the second half of last year with the fractured shoulder as he missed three of those final four games. I mean, with that offense, having a running back and the same style, that's the difference, too, the same style of running back. This isn't going to a Jalen Richard-type running back. This is a guy who runs a lot like Jacobs. To me, that's huge on offense for continuity, too.
Yeah, and this is no disrespect to DeAndre Washington last year, but the Raiders just didn't really have a number two if Jacobs went down. And we've seen Devontae Booker in spots. I think he can handle a bigger workload if he's called upon. The other thing is, I talked about in the previous piece, that the Raiders have to play these cold weather games. They still have to go to Denver late in the year. If they need that win to fill a playoff spot and they need to run the ball, they're equipped to do that with Booker and Jacobs.
Yes, absolutely.
Mo, real quick, can I ask you about Damon Arnett? And I know he didn't have a great game Sunday night against the Chiefs, but I told Scott this a couple times in the press box. I was like, I like his energy. I like what he brings. I think he's going to be a really good corner. Obviously, he's still a rookie, but what are your thoughts on Damon Arnett and his progression?
I think with him, it's going to take some time. He did miss some time with a thumb surgery. He was out for a while. I know he commented on a tweet where I believe someone tweeted that he gave up a bunch of catches and he was kind of like, you're right. I think with Damon Arnett, you're just going to have to wait it out with him. I, from what I see, he's not playing great. He's not terrible, but he's going through the learning process. He is, as you mentioned, he is a rookie. So you're going to have to go through the bumps and bruises with him. But I like, as you said, like Jonathan Abram, I like his energy. And he's physical. And he'll get up in the face of a Travis Kelce or a wide receiver on the other side. He has that physical approach, but again, you want to see him knock down a couple more passes, maybe get a pick here and there, but I think the progression is there. You're just going to have to be patient with him.
Mo Moten has been our guest here. Mo, before we go, because you're also famous for your food takes, and we got the cranberry thing yesterday, so we know where you stand on that, but what was your preferred Thanksgiving dessert yesterday?
Definitely red velvet cake. I had a couple of slices of red velvet cake yesterday, so that's my thing. As you guys know, as you guys may not know, I don't eat pie.
Right.
Not peach cobbler, no pie at all, apple pie, blueberry pie,
sweet
no
potato.
Pie at all for me. I'm a cake guy. Cake and cookies are my thing, but I had red velvet cake, and I enjoyed it yesterday.
No, Q, he won't eat sweet potato pie either.
What is wrong with you?
No, not a sweet potato pie person either.
And don't even
get pecan pie?
No pecan pie. Carrot cake is a good thing. I'm with Lee Mayock. When she tweeted about carrot cake earlier today, I was nodding my head in agreement. Carrot cake is
Carrot cake is my favorite cake.
Yeah, it's great cake.
I love carrot cake, but I can't believe.
But, no pie? But not cheesecake. Not cheesecake, Mo.
Not cheesecake. To me, cheesecake is not really a cake.
It's a pie.
It's more of a flan pastry. I don't consider it a cake.
I think it's more of like a pie.
It's too sweet
pastry.
For me.
Yeah, pastry kind of.
Yeah, there you go. Now, one last question for you. Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr.
Mike Tyson, baby.
Yeah, I'm watching clips of Mike Tyson on Twitter, and I don't want to fight that guy. Now, Mike Tyson is 70. I still wouldn't want to fight him, so I'm going with Mike Tyson on that one.
And it's crazy because, I mean, Roy Jones Jr., I mean, God bless him, because I look at him, they're doing their stare down. I'm watching the video on Twitter. And legit, Roy Jones Jr., who was a tough guy, man, he just looks like he wants no part of the damn thing. It's pretty hysterical. It's going to be funny.
Well, he almost died in the ring, last I recall.
Yes.
Roy Tarpley almost killed. I thought he was dead.
Yeah.
I seriously, when he got knocked out by Tarpley, I was like, oh, damn, he died.
Yeah, that was brutal, man.
All bad.
All right. Well, Mo Moten, listen, man, we're glad you had a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will catch up with you next week.
Appreciate you guys. Enjoy your weekend.
All right. There he is, the Baron of Brooklyn himself, Mo Moten, joining us as he does every Friday here on
Velvet
Silver.
Cake. He said red velvet cake?
Red velvet cake.
That's pretty high sedity right there, man. That's, you know what I mean?
I do.
Like, he's a little bit too high class for me. He's upper. He must be from Upper East Side. You know what I mean? He's from the good side of town eating red velvet cake.
Are you saying he drinks his tea with his pinky out?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I drink tea just to keep my voice okay so I can do all these radio shows. He drinks tea as like a afternoon activity or something.
That's our man. He is the Baron. The Baron of Brooklyn.
I guess so.
There you go.
Shout out to Mo, man. I got to get on his level.
He's our man. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls on the Raider Nation hotline. What do you think of the game against the Falcons on Sunday? Is there a danger of an emotional letdown for the Raiders? 702-365-9200. You're with Q. You're with Scott. You're on Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio on this Friday after Thanksgiving. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving with your friends, family, loved ones. Wherever you were. Q, by the way, we did not make a whole turkey. I don't know what you do for Thanksgiving, but I didn't make a whole turkey.
Make a half a turkey?
Yeah, no. I did a turkey breast. I smoked it.
Okay, that might be good.
Like 4.5 hour, you know, nice smoke.
I'm not really a turkey dude.
Yeah, no.
Matter of fact, I didn't eat any turkey at all yesterday. I had all ham.
That's nice.
I love ham.
So that's funny because my family's the same way. I'm the only one, the exception, I think my older son likes turkey too, but my wife, my daughter, my little guys, like, they much rather have ham. It's, I guess, the Cuban in them because they love pork. So I just made the turkey breast because nobody ever wants leftovers. I want leftovers. Right. Like, I want to make like turkey sandwiches. I want to make, you know, turkey soup. I want to do all this stuff. And now I don't get to. Joe mentioned earlier he was about to eat his, so I got none. You have leftover ham at least?
No, we actually went to some family's house. This is the first time in a long time that we didn't have people over here. Thank God. I'm telling you, man. It's one of those things that you just like going somewhere sometime instead of having people over all the time and you having all those leftovers. So, yeah, we're good to go. But I will say, this morning we looked up and we kind of looked around and was like, damn, we ain't got no leftovers.
Exactly.
Now, there you go.
We had some, my daughter and wife made this like sweet potato souffle type stuff with like pecans on top of it. It was really good, really good. But they made like this sounds big good dish that would have like fed like 15 people. So I'm going to be eating that for a while. Because it's,
all right, well,
it's not,
you
bad.
Know, I always think the turkey's kind of dry too. So
yeah,
how is it when it's
out.
Smoked?
It was good, man. Oh, it was perfect.
Is it dry or is it juicy?
No, it's all juicy.
Okay,
yeah,
that's why I like the ham better than, you know, than a turkey, because turkeys are usually dry except for the dark meat. So
yeah, exactly. What I do is I take it and I rubbed it, and then really I baste it a couple times per the whole time with some apple cider vinegar, and it just keeps it nice and moist.
Gotcha.
And it was good, but it was all gone. I mean,
moral of the story is you have no more.
I have no more. We have pie left, so Mo wouldn't want to come over.
No.
But and
him
I love
his red velvet cake.
Yes, Twitter's giving it to him already too with the pinky stuff, which is great.
They should give it to him, man. That dude, he took that George Jefferson theme. We're moving on up, and he took it seriously.
Yeah.
He moved up and out.
Yeah. What about you, Damon?
Well, my parents made deep fried turkey and that was delicious.
Was it?
And
then
Q for you, I mean, like, are your kids like still at the house with you?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, you can't even use the "it's some leftovers in there" excuse now. Now you got to like cook.
Yeah,
I know. Exactly.
Take them away, man. It's just all gone.
But deep fried turkey sounds good.
Oh man, it was delicious. First time they did it, and it was just like, we should just do this. Maybe just, you know, on a Sunday, just cause.
Yeah, just cause.
Yeah.
Little football food.
Hey, man, if you deep fry it, it's got to be good.
Well, and that's why I want this COVID stuff, this pause we're on in Nevada for 3 weeks to be over by Christmas, because I want to go out for Christmas. I have reservations.
Right.
We're doing Italian food, man. It's like, get out of the house. I don't want
you're
dishes.
On a pause right now?
Yeah.
What happened? As soon as I left, the COVID city shut down?
Yeah, well, we were at the game that night, Q, and the governor went on a half hour before.
I remember that.
Yeah, and his whole point was, like, all the restaurants, everybody, 25% capacity.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, so.
And, like, only four at a table, right?
Don't get me started.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, my bad.
Because it's not political. It just pisses me off because I got seven people in my family. I can't go out.
Of course.
But I'm hoping it's just in time, the 3 weeks. If everybody does their job, then Scott can go to dinner. And I know that's your main concern. So
that's my main concern, too.
not so. All right. We are up on the top of the hour. Wow, an hour by already, man. It's crazy.
Man, fast.
You can give us a call, 702-365-9200. Get online, and we will get you on the air to talk about Raider football. When we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by our own Nick Cothrell, He's going to talk about the Falcons' offense. Missing some weapons, might be missing Julio Jones, we'll see. But what sort of problems do they present for this Raiders defense? They have talent. They've been very underachieving, especially the past few weeks, actually. I think they scored 9 points against New Orleans, right, the last game?
Yeah.
It was not good for them. So we'll talk to him about that as well. You're with Q, you're with Scott, here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.